You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Rodo. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Rodo Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Thursday, April 20th, which means it's 420. 2017! And yes, this is the Roto Experts in the Morning, alongside Matt Modiga, CTM Baseball, and the Fantasy Executive. How you doing? Corey Parson. My name is Greg Sussman. We got a very fun show for you today. It's 420, and I got to break down, like, athletes in 420 and how that all works. We'll break that down today. I got a hysterical story from Mike Gundy in Oklahoma State that I got to bring up to you guys because I think it's unbelievable. We've gotten requests that people are excited, Matt, about us talking about Eric Thames every day. So we'll get into that as well. And of course, Amir Garrett and what he did. Not a New Yorker, not a local guy, just a really good pitcher. All that next 2 hours for you, up until the OGs, Old School Fantasy, where Dr. A will be in studio live here today. So, a fun day here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Greg. What's the deal? Looking forward to all the activities taking place, going down. Looking forward to Old Schools, having a good time with Dr. A. Of course, we got to discuss Amir Garrett, who is a part of my Tout Wars team.
Ring the bell.
Where's the damn bell
That's not a bell.
That's not a bell.
That was easy.
I heard a bell, but I guess that came from Bavona downstairs. So got that popping right now. Looking forward to getting into discussing some of the things that went on in that situation. Not to mention the fact we also have why did everybody get up all at once?
We're all looking for your damn bell.
I thought y'all was leaving me. I'm like, well, what the hell is going on? I didn't have to do this by myself today, but I'm well capable of doing so if you gentlemen decided to abandon me. But now, looking forward to it, and today is 420, so we get into everything to discuss about that because we have, in the NFL, especially in fantasy football, we've had players lose significant amount of times to marijuana smoke.
And not just scrub players, either.
No, good players. Like, I believe 75% of the National Football League is smoking marijuana. They need to change the rules.
There you go. Matty Modiga, what's going on with you today?
It's Thursday. We got afternoon baseball. The Mets won last night. The Rangers played tonight. Let's do this.
What are you going?
Because the Mets won.
You say this every time
I want them to lose.
I mean, sooner or later, we had to win a game.
Yeah.
It's just the law of averages.
I do want to mention at the top of the show here, Russell Westbrook fell to James Harden in Houston last night, 115 and 111. Westbrook scored 51 points in a triple-double in the playoffs, the most ever points scored in a triple-double in the playoffs. But he missed 14 shots in the fourth quarter, and Houston came back. I get it. It's Russell Westbrook. I understand that. But Corey, doesn't he have to pass at some point?
We need to go pass it too. That's the problem.
Victor Oladipo took like 14 shots total.
Yeah, I get it. Like, well, we know what Westbrook's game is. He wants to be the one-man show, Superman. He wants to get it done all by himself. But if he's averaging a triple-double, that does mean he is sharing the basketball.
I understand that, but I feel like that all came like the first half, and then once the fourth quarter came, he was done passing.
Well, that's probably the reason why Kevin Durant is not in Oklahoma City right now.
I saw a great tweet. Well, it wasn't a great tweet. I guess it was an obvious tweet, I should say, that said something along the lines of, wow, man, wouldn't it be great if Russell Westbrook had, you know, another superstar on their team like Kevin Durant? And I'm like, yeah, but we tried that, and it didn't really work, so... I thought that was a really funny tweet. So we'll get into that. 420, of course, as Corey mentioned, we're going to bring up next hour. And also this Mike Gundy story, like I said, that is hysterical to me. And I think you're going to really be kicked out of that, Corey. So we'll do that a little bit later on. But I do want to start today with Amir Garrett, which is crazy because he lost. And that's what's funny. Like, we're starting a show off with a guy that lost yesterday. But in losing, I think he outreached even our expectations. The final line for Amir Garrett yesterday was 7 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs, walked 1 dude, struck out 12 in 97 pitches over 7 innings. This is the toughest matchup Amir Garrett has faced thus far, against a good Baltimore Orioles lineup, and he basically stymied them. You know, he lit up a couple singles in the second, a sac fly to Manny Machado in the fifth, and that was basically it. How impressed were you by this performance, Matt Modica?
I'm extremely impressed. I own zero shares of Amir Garrett.
Should have got on board like we did, dog.
Bro.
I know you guys got on board. And here's the thing with Amir Garrett, if like you're writing him up today, you had to be like the fantasy exec and Mr. Sussman over there. And you had to get in on him about 10 days ago. You can't get in on him now. He's gone. He's long gone. You know, he's not around. But, I mean, if I'm a Reds fan, this is very encouraging. The first thing I do when I pull up Amir Garrett's, say, Fangraph page.
Which I will do right now.
Which I've never been to.
Come on, you are evolving, fantasy. Don't blaspheme on this show. First thing I do is I look at the K percentage. 28.4. That's pretty damn impressive. The based on ball percentage, 4.1. Then I go right down to the next thing. He's got a 47% ground ball rate. That's really good. He's throwing 66, 67% first pitch strikes. You got to like that. Almost a 13% swinging strike rate. This is a guy who wasn't known as like a swing and miss kind of guy. But it's translating early on. Very promising. You look at whatever you want to look at, FIP, XFIP, Sierra. They're all in line. Look, even if he pitches, say, from this point on, the rest of the season, wipe out the stats he has, and pitches like 350-ish or a little higher, that's still a win. That's a home. If you picked him up, that's a win. That's a home run, and that's a great investment.
Because what's that, Corey? If he pitches 350 going forward, I mean, you're still getting a 3 ERA for the whole season. I mean, that's good.
But I'm saying wipe out the stats right
okay.
now. So you'll finish. Say he finishes from 420 to October 1st with a 357 ERA.
Okay.
That's a win in my book.
All right, so let me ask you this. Let's rank them. Andrew Triggs, Amir Garrett, Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw. What do you think? how you got that stacking up, man? Because I'm excited about my pitching staff coming together like this with these arms that I got off the waiver wire and later on in draft. And Amir Garrett is a guy. He was phenomenal in spring training, like a phenom coming up. A lot of people said, well, listen, temper your expectations going into the regular season. I look at the box score and I see 12 Ks for my son Amir Garrett. I'm excited about it.
How does your son Jaden feel when you call Amir Garrett your son?
Hell, he understands my lingo. He knows he's not really my son.
Did he ever get here yesterday?
Huh?
Did he ever get here?
Yeah, it was a rough day.
I feel bad for him.
Feel bad for me.
What do I feel bad for you for?
I'm the one doing all this running and you know what I mean?
He was the one who sat on a bus for hours in traffic.
Yeah, he was sitting and riding on somebody else's dime. But
you were being on TV.
Well, I'm the fantasy executive. You know what I'm saying? This is what
is what I do.
The cameras call.
Speaking of TV, Foul Territory returns tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, only on the Fantasy Sports Network. Check that out.
It's going to be good times.
The other thing with the which is funny about this game with Amir Garrett, that's the other side. Ubaldo Jimenez, 7 2/3, just
how
two hits,
that?
4 walks, 3 strikeouts. He didn't allow a single run, Corey.
Yeah, Ubaldo. This guy every now and then will show you one of these performances. Yeah, but we know how Ubaldo gets down. If you think you're gonna get too many performances like this, please, please, please govern yourselves accordingly. I think this was a situation where he was going up against a Reds lineup, which can, you know, it's not a lot of big time hitters in this lineup. So he took advantage of that situation. Strong night for Ubaldo, but this is not something that we're going to get a lot of. And everybody that went to the waiver wire and spent $450,000 on Brad Bock, he got you a save.
Brad Bock did get you a save. It was a clean inning for him. 9 pitches, struck out, one strikeout. Zach Britton did say yesterday he's feeling a little bit better. But the key thing is the MRI on Friday. What will that show? We have no idea. I mean, that's going to be the answer, like how long he's going to be out. Because the MRI, remember, the first time was, I guess, clean enough that he's not having any surgery or anything. But it is inflamed. Will that inflammation in the elbow go down on Friday? That's the big question regarding Zach Britton, Matt.
Yeah, that actually is the big question. That's why Sunday night, when we all had to place bids, it truly was blind bidding because we really didn't know the news. You don't know, if, like I said, it's going to be a 10-day, maybe misses 20 days tops, and then he's back healthy. I pretty much bid the same that I bid on Jason Grilley. I got him in a couple of leagues. I know some people bid like over $400, which seemed a bit exuberant to me. But I went like 113 or so.
Nice.
Around that.
Solid.
And I mean, he's a guy I think you had to take, at least put a keep your honest bid in there for him, because this is a talented arm. And if there is a long-term effect on Britton, this is a guy you want to own. I don't see Darren O'Day being a closer. That's not his profile. I mean, maybe Michael Givens could be a threat, but if Brock succeeds as he did last night, it's his job.
If and when Zach Britton does come back, is Brad Brock one of these guys, though, like Andrew Miller, Chris Davinsky, so on and so forth, that as a middle reliever you can hold on to anyway?
I would hold on to him for at least a couple of weeks just to make sure that there's no... I mean, going off the last couple of years, he's trending in that direction. And, you know, a high upside guy. And if there is, even if he comes back healthy, there's just a little concern on the Orioles' mind. Maybe they don't pitch him like back to back as much, or they kind of ease him back a little. I mean, I don't know. It's all about tomorrow. It's really, you know.
But what I'm saying, though, is like one of these shutdown middle relievers that help the ERA and whip, could Brock be one of those guys even when Britton comes back?
Yes, he can be.
Okay. For the Reds yesterday, even though they did not score, they did get a stolen base from Scott Schebler and Billy Hamilton. Hamilton's seventh of the year. The average for Billy Hamilton now sits at 241. Give that update again.
Could I ask one question? Let's go off the board.
Yeah, of course.
Because we were talking about Amir Garrett. Who would you rather have going forward? Amir Garrett or the pitching version of Eric Thames, Jason Vargas?
Well, let's chat about Jason Vargas then for a second if you want to get into it. So last night, Madison Bumgarner suffered his third loss of the year. He's 0-3 despite 6 innings, 7 hits, a run, 4 strikeouts. Jason Vargas was better, Corey. 7 innings, 4 hits, 9 strikeouts. He didn't allow a run. The ERA sits at .44. Amir Garrett or Jason Vargas, Corey, I'll let you answer first.
Oh, this is a tough one right here. I think I'm going to go with the young upside play in Amir Garrett.
Is that because you own him?
I own him, and I'm kind of locked into him. I'm invested fully. Now, what Vargas has been able to do so far this season with the ERA under 1, not to mention the fact that 23 Ks, that's not really his profile, though, with those big-time strikeouts. So I think that, enjoy it while it's going on right now. Like, you get on board, you know what I'm saying? Spend a couple dollars in Fab if he's out there. Throw him out there. Enjoy it. But still, be very, very wary because I still think that this is like...
Well, you see, on Friday, I did a show with Al Melchior. And after that, I was downstairs.
FanRack Fantasy Baseball, which you listen to every day here on Fantasy Sports. Monday, Thursday, and Friday here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, definitely recommended listening. And me and Benny were chatting, and Jason Vargas got into the conversation, and he was like, I'm definitely putting bids on him this weekend. And I was like, yeah, I seen what he did the first two times. So I went home, I did a deep dive, and after conferring with Benny, doing a deep dive, I was in. I did overbid this weekend on him, because my bids were well over the runner-up bids. But it was very encouraging.
It happens.
So what's your answer then? Before I get
I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with Jason Vargas, and here's why. This is a veteran pitcher. This is a guy whose changeup, for some reason this year, is getting a hell of a lot more swing and misses than it did previously. He plays in a park that suppresses home runs. He's traditionally a ground ball guy, control guy. He seems like he's solving right-handed hitters. Obviously, small sample size. That's a disclaimer right there. But if say he's using the two-seamer more, it seems like something else is going on when he's facing the righties. And if whatever is working, I'm going to buy into that. I do think I am buying Amir Garrett now, because as I mentioned before, but this is a younger pitcher in a not so friendly ballpark. So I'm gonna take the veteran.
So for me, and we'll give it back to you, Cor. For me, I was going with Jason Vargas as well, and you hit one of the major things for me, Matt, and that's the ballpark. Everyone keeps calling it the Great American Small Park, and so much has become a cliche, but that scares me enough that Amir Garrett, as a young pitcher, he's going to hit his lumps. Like, people, he's going to go around the league several more times. He's going to see it. Like, I think, as you said, if he pitches to a 3.57 ERA the rest of the way, that's freaking awesome. That's great. I don't know if he's going to do that. Jason Vargas, 34 years old. He's been in the league forever, seemingly. And he's also a star. He's in a really, really good ballpark. And his peripherals, you hate to say it, are just as good as Amir Garrett's. And I don't know what he figured out when he came back from this latest injury, but Vargas seems to be just as for real as Garrett does. And like I said, as young as Garrett is, long-term, sure, given the young guy with the upside. But this season, just 1 year, I want Vargas too.
You're not, I'm not really fooling with a dude with fastball velocities in the 80s, bro. That scares me. I don't care if you play in Yosemite. When your fastball is sitting around that 86 to 88 range, I understand big strikeout, big power is not his game. He mixes pitches. But the bottom line of the matter is, this is like a junk baller.
Well, let me give you another name then. Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel is another guy that pitched really, really well last night. And Keuchel doesn't throw a fast fastball at all. 7 innings, 8 hit, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. He's won a Cy Young. Keuchel's off to an unbelievable start as well. Do you believe in him, Corey?
Well, last year's trash. You know what I'm saying?
He was terrible last year.
I'm always down to buy last year's trash.
Okay.
But we know he has Cy Young pedigree. Jason Vargas is a junk baller, Matt.
But here's the thing with Vargas. As you mentioned, he doesn't throw above 90. He's not a flamethrower. But his fastball and his money pitch is the change. And for some reason or other this season, he's getting swing and misses on it at an extremely high rate. So that's his money pitch. I think he can succeed with that. You know, he's craftier. He's older. He has shown success in the past. Look, he's never been, you know, a top guy that you're like, oh, I got to have Jason Vargas. But something's different, and you have to take notice to that. Is he going to have his lumps? I'm sure. Look, this guy's not going to. But even with some regression, I do think he's made some positives here. And any correction with right-handed batters, like Greg said, the park, you have to factor everything in. So that's why I'm going to go with him. And I'm not hating on Amir Garrett. I just spoke to love why I think he will be good. The one thing with Amir Garrett is, look at Michael Fulmer last season. He came up. That month was magical. 30 innings or so. Nobody scored a run on him. He was striking out batters like crazy. Post All-Star break, he was a 4 ERA pitcher. The strikeout rate plummeted. That's the only reason why I'm just saying you have to have some apprehensions. I would be ecstatic if I picked up Amir Garrett. I'm not trying to rain on your parade.
No. You know, no. Yes, you are.
I think the future is bright for Amir Garrett.
The future is bright, but I think Michael Fulmer is a really good name to bring up here because he was so, so good early on when he came up. And then he got tired, and then he got worn down, and then the pitches weren't breaking as much. And you look at Amir Garrett, who throws primarily a fastball. 61% of his pitches are fastballs. 20% is a changeup, which, again, that's not really the hard stuff, like the strong breaking ball. So maybe like he'll be able to throw those two pitches all year. But 19% of the time, he's throwing that slider, which is the one that he's going to have to bite. Can it last all year? We'll see. But obviously, off to a tremendous April start here is both Amir Garrett and Jason Vargas. And last night, Vargas did lead the Royals to a victory over San Francisco, 2-0. Royals get back to .500. Joaquin Soria pitches the 8th. Kelvin Herrera pitches the 9th for his 3rd save. It was a pretty clean game. Lorenzo Cain stole his 5th base of the year, while Paolo Orlando steals his 1st. 2 hits from Mike Moustakas off to a nice start this year with .300 average. 2-for-3 with Salvador Perez. While Eric Hosmer really continued to struggle, he was just 1-for-4. Only saw 9 pitches and 4 at-bats, batting .204 on the year.
Yeah, I think Hosmer, look, I'm not the biggest Hosmer guy. I think Hosmer's a very good
MLB player.
Yeah. And last season, he was, for fantasy, you know, guy hit 25 home runs, somehow, some way, home in a fly ball rate. But I think he's pressing a little too. You know, he knows this is a free agent year. Some guys, it works wonders.
Yep.
Some guys, you know, he's also a guy that's possibly getting traded. So, you know, he's a young guy.
A lot going through the mind. Yeah.
Hey, this game was 2 hours and 28 minutes.
You like that?
That was pretty fast.
You like that? It's good.
The Reds game was 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Oh, excellent.
But after the break, could we touch back on Dallas Keuchel? I think that's a guy we need.
That's exactly where we're going to go after the break. We're going to touch on Dallas Keuchel. We're going to touch on that Angels-Astros game where Jason Ramirez, by the way, had 9 strikeouts, which was actually more than Dallas Keuchel. So let's talk about the Angels and the Astros. We'll also, of course, get into the Brewers because people love our Brewers coverage. So we'll get into that, too. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Sublime morning. here on 420. Early in the morning, riding through the sheep. You definitely don't know this, Corey. Light me up a cigarette and let me... Nope, nothing?
Nothing.
Bodega, this has got to be you, right?
Yeah, I'm not a big Sublime guy, though. You know, I'm more of a grunge guy.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that was my time, you know. I was like
you Nirvana?
Know, young boy, yeah, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and I was 18 to 21
range. Yeah. I can see you as a Dave Matthews guy, too, though.
I did like some Dave Matthews, but I find him, you know, there was a time. I think he's good in moderation.
Fair enough. The Los Angeles Angels and Anaheim fell to Dallas Keuchel and the Astros last night, 5-1. And Keuchel, 7 innings, 8 hits, a run, 7 strikeouts. And I said it. I said it this morning that I'm the first to admit when I'm wrong. I was dead wrong on Dallas Keuchel. Like, I did not buy this. I was completely out on him because he stunk last year. This is a guy that I thought for most of last year, before at the end, you know, it was a little bit better. He was awful. And with his average velocity not being very fast, not being really a strikeout pitcher, he really relied on contact. And he was getting too many fly balls last year. Too many balls hit hard against him. And I did not buy that just totally rebounding in 2017. Through 3 starts, obviously I'm wrong.
Yeah, you know, last year there was an injury. I mean, whether you know you want to believe it or not, there was something wrong with the shoulder. He was a different type of pitcher. It was not the same guy. I mean, if you look at the home versus road splits last year, he did not pitch bad at home. It was on the road away from Minute Maid where he got murdered. I mean, he really took a beating on the road. This season so far, 3 of his 4 starts have come at home. The one road game was at the friendly confines of O.co. So, you know, he's been tremendous to date. I think he will be a very... I think he's real once again. I mean, even if he pitched to his 2014 level.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody keeps saying 2015. If I'm a Dallas Keuchel...
Definitely.
I'd sign off for 2014 right now.
Absolutely.
You know.
I think some statistics to note from last year, the ground ball percentage, and again, it's 3 starts. I understand that. So these are very, very skewed. But the ground ball percentage was 56.5. Now it's up to 70, which is a career high right now for Dallas Keuchel. The hard hit percentage, last year it was at 30%. Now down to 19%. So, and right now, technically, it's a career low. So they're not making good contact against him this year. If you want to look and see if his velocity has gone up a tick, looking at the average fastball, I was looking at the average fastball just a second ago. Right now, that average fastball is at 88.7 miles per hour. Basically in line where it's been. So it's the same, it's really the same. Same speed everywhere. He's just mixing, matching better. I guess
he's not hurt. That's it right there. And if he pitches better at home because when he's home he has somebody to rub his belly for him. Now, 65 last night for example, 65 of the 95 pitches he threw were for strikes. You know what I mean? Getting the ground balls. This is Dallas Keuchel's game. He's locked in. He's feeling real good, confident. That's why I'm so into buying last year's trash, because guys like this can always bounce back. You know he has the big time stuff. So it's obvious he was dealing with some kind of injury last year. Now he's feeling healthy, feeling good about himself right now. Success breeds confidence. So we're going to see another good season from Dallas Keuchel. I love it.
The only pitch that I can see that has a significant raise in velocity here is his cutter, which went from 85.7 to 87.4. And even that's not a drastic difference. It's 2 miles per hour, which certainly can change things. And that is a number that was down from his previous years last year, and it's back up now. But Corey mentioned it, Matt. That control where he's just pounding the strike zone, and that ability is getting more ground balls.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. This is a guy that's pitched to, you know, high 50s, low 60s in the ground ball percentage. I mean, 70 is like beyond uber elite. I mean, look, everything is great. I believe in him. In February, I think I had him ranked 21st. Then beginning of March, when spring training started, they said they were going to hold him back a little. So I did push him back to like 30th. But I'm a true believer. But hey, listen, he's not going to pitch to an 0.96 ERA. I mean, his left on base percentage is 99%. His BABIP right now is under 200. But this is going to be a very good pitcher that I see. At worst, is probably like 2014.
Let me ask you this, and I know this is something that you were looking at and concerned about. Can Giles pitch the 8th of a 4-5-1 game? Why?
You know what? I didn't see the situation. AJ Hinch the other day said he's my closer. I may use him in different situations. I'm going to assume that that might have been the biggest threat for them, and the Astros needed to lock this
up. You would be correct. In the eighth inning, up 5-1, so that's four runs. Yunel Escobar, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols. There you go.
Yeah, that's big dogs, right?
Yeah, there. I just, right now, my main concern with Giles is getting it done. I just, last year I invested and I got burned. I went back to the well on in certain instances. And I mean, the talent is there. Hopefully he's one of these guys that needs like a month or so every year. It's kind of like a Cody Allen type. The first month or so is a terrifying roller coaster ride, and then he settles in.
It's very funny because, and we saw this with the A's a couple of weeks ago, when Ryan Matson, we all assumed he was the closer, and he pitched to Trout and Pujols that first week. We saw Ken Giles last night. They're up 5-1 in the eighth. You face the top of the order, which is Escobar, Trout, and Pujols, right? The 1-2-3, and these are three good hitters, especially Trout and Pujols, of course. And then after that, you can understand why you bring the big gun to face those three, because after that, you face Jeffrey Marte, the cleanup hitter, C.J. Crone, the first baseman, and then Andrelton Simmons, the light-hitting shortstop, as your next hitters. Now you can see why the closer will come in and face Trout and Pujols.
Yeah, I think this trend continues with a lot of teams and a lot of situations. And it's the fact that they have two very good relief pitchers besides Giles, it will allow them to do it for fantasy purposes. It's going to annoy the hell out of you. But hey, listen, as long as he's the main guy getting the main chances, I'm going to be happy.
For Houston, Jose Altuve steals his sixth base and got the average now all the way up to the 328, the OBP 403, slowish start. But the name I want to bring up to you, Matt, is the guy that hit his first home run last night, and that's Josh Reddick. So Reddick was 3-for-4, 3 runs scored, 2 ribbies. The average is up to 341. He doesn't really walk much. OBP's at 362. Now, at the beginning of the year, they started with Alex Bregman in the two-hole. A couple days off led to Reddick in the two-hole, and Reddick hasn't stopped hitting since. In the GST league, actually, I drafted against my partner's wishes. I drafted Josh Reddick, and we drafted him, this is exactly the round, I don't want to get it wrong. We drafted Josh Reddick in the, where is it? Well, okay, in the 23rd round. And Nando, my partner, is like, I'm not a Josh Reddick guy. He doesn't do it for me. I'm like, listen, this is an everyday outfielder and a really good lineup that, like, maybe he'll find the power stroke again. And although that was his first home run, the average is significantly up from where it was last year. He's loving the two-hole. Number one, my question is Josh Reddick for real? Number two, can it sustain?
I mean, I think he's for real in the fact, as you stated, he's an everyday outfielder on a very good team in a very good lineup. And if he's batting second, That's just a wonderful thing. You're behind Springer and in front of Altuve. Look at a guy like Mitch Haniger. Why is Mitch Haniger having so much success? He is hitting in front of Robinson Cano,
yep,
with Nelson Cruz behind him. I don't care if they're off the slow starts. Pitchers are going to give the unproven guy the fastball, challenge that guy. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was like, Trey Turner should be batting second in Washington. It just makes too much sense. So I think the Reddick thing, it's for real for what he can be. As you said, you got him in the 23rd round. He was a guy that cost you nothing. I mean, this was in pretty much every draft. He went very late, but this guy has tools. He can hit 15 home runs. He can bat, you know, say 280. He has skills that you want. Look, everybody on your team is not going to be a star.
Right.
And this is a guy that can fill that, you know, back, you know, one of those back spots in your outfield.
Glue guy.
Exactly.
A glue guy on the fantasy team, basically, is what he is.
And he's got talent. He's not some scrub. I mean, he's got talent.
Yeah, and I think he just turned 30 or something like that.
Yeah, he's not old. He's not old, man.
He was actually on, what's the show?
He's on the Kevin Millar show.
Yes.
Intentional Talk.
Oh, he was on there? He was a part of that?
He was showing the gun show.
He was doing his wrestling impressions, actually. Doing wrestling trivia and doing wrestling impressions.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
We should get him doing impressions with us.
I agree. As long as he doesn't do an angle impression. For the Angels, J.C. Ramirez, who you had said be better in the bullpen, Matt, yesterday. 5 1/3, 6 hits, 3 runs. Struck out 9 guys.
Yeah, look at that.
That he did. I even tweeted this out. I was like, J.C. Ramirez has struck out 9 Astros through, like, you know, whatever, 4 or 5 innings. So I still think he's a better arm in the bullpen. I think he's given up like 8 runs in 10 innings or something, or 10 runs in 8 innings, something like that. So I think that's a better thing for him. The Astros and the Angels, this is like the really good team versus a team that's trying to be better than they can be.
I agree with that. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Brew Crew. And we also have to talk about the biggest home run I've ever seen in my life. Stick around. More Roto Experts going your way next. So, of course, as you know, you can listen to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network live or on demand anytime you want. iTunes, SoundCloud, of course, the Google Play Store. So our buddy Marty listens to the show every day, Modica, and he loves listening in Google Play. Like, we get him through the day, which is what we're here for. We're trying to be your distraction from work and get you through the day. So he tweeted at me yesterday afternoon. He's basically like, damn, Eric Thames just grounded out with the bases loaded. Can't wait to hear how you guys react tomorrow, because we've been going crazy about Eric Thames for, you know, much like the rest of the fantasy community, for days and weeks at this point. Yesterday, Eric Thames finally goes hitless, Matt, 0-2, with the ground out, with the bases loaded, scores a run, and now the average is all the way down to 408.
But the thing I take away from this game is I believe he walked like 3 times. So, I mean, the batting eye, there's discipline there. He's locked in right now. Look, you're not going to get a hit every time. Baseball, you know, you're going to fail 70% of the time or more. So, I mean, that was encouraging, the fact that he didn't get a hit but walked 3 times.
But do you think he was more apt to walk because of how he was being pitched to yesterday? No Ryan Braun in the lineup. Remember, Travis Shaw was the third hitter yesterday, no Braun.
Yeah, I mean, Travis Shaw was. But Travis Shaw homered that first inning. I mean, I was intently watching this game as a Kyle Hendricks owner as well. So, I mean, if anybody was going to homer, I was kind of hoping it was Thames. I do have a couple shares of Shore, but Thames is more important to me. So, but, I mean, I think it's progression. This is a guy that wasn't all right when he was over in Korea. I mean, he was dominant.
He was like the MVP over there, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was putting up like
Russell Westbrook numbers. Russell Westbrook numbers.
He was he was the Barry.
He really was.
He was the Barry Bonds in the KBO.
Without the cream and the clear.
We don't know that yet.
So, yeah, as much as people love our Eric Thames commentary, I have to imagine they love our Keon Broxton commentary even more, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Keon Broxton yesterday
struck out 2 more times.
Struck out 2 more times. He was 0-4. And I have a legitimate question for you guys today. So, it's a Thursday where every major league team isn't playing, right? Mm-hmm. So, I do not have a full lineup where I can make my daily changes, Corey.
Yeah.
I own Keon Broxton. I don't want to start him. I would rather start nobody at this point than Keon Broxton. Am I allowed to do that?
I don't think that's a bad idea, because you get penalized, right?
Yeah, I get strikeouts, yeah. OBP, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you get penalized for it, it's going to be tough. We need to see this kid start to make some more contact, improve on his plate discipline. I mean, what's he batting right now? 119? I mean, my son can bat 119.
Yeah, I mean, last season, look, we saw it last season. As much as we love that power-speed combo, what he did, you know, second half, we did see a 36% strikeout rate. So, I mean, there's that. You didn't go in there, you know, thinking everything was just going to go smooth. In your type of league where you get penalized for strikeouts, I think you got to ride him on the bench right now. Hopefully he figures everything out. It's somebody I still wouldn't cut.
Oh, no, I'm going to cut him.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
I know you're chomping at the bit. I know you're chomping at the bit for that. But as long as he's still a member, and as long as the Milwaukee Brewers are still putting him out there every day, which I think will still be the case for the next week or two, and then, you know, if it hasn't improved, then they'll probably do something.
You see, but another problem with this is that Jonathan VR, you feel what I'm saying? He's striking out, too. He struck out 3 times last night. He's batting 138. Now, he's not a player that you can cut, because we know the pedigree he has, obviously led the majors in stolen bases last year. But at some point, this guy's got to turn it around, too. He's only playing a little bit better than Jonathan Broxton right now.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, as we mentioned, it's, you know, almost 3 weeks in, 2.5. A good week changes everything. I mean, you look at the batting average. I think Mike Stanton went into the game yesterday with a 226 batting average. The game ended, he had a 255 batting average. you know, it's just a little bit of confidence can go a long way, too.
Yeah.
You know, one guy gets hot for a week, you're going to see the numbers greatly swing. So, like I said, guys that have the kind of upside that a Keon Broxton has, I think that's when you really have to exercise extreme patience and use the bench.
Speaking of using the bench, Kyle Hendricks is a name that we brought up in the Fantasy Biffles yesterday. And we were very interested to see how his performance would be against a good hitting team in Milwaukee at home, where he was dominant last year. Not that he wasn't dominant everywhere last year, but he was off to a slow start. And yesterday, in all honesty, didn't quell any fears. 4 hits, 4 runs, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. And what Mike Florio pointed out to me yesterday was the velocity everywhere is down. The fastball velocity. Last year, it was almost 88. Now, barely 85. The changeup. Last year, it was 80. This year, it's, you know, a tick down at 79. The curveball, 75.5 last year. Now, it's at 71.2 miles per hour. Right now, we talked about it when we had Corey Schwartz here last week with StatCast. They are measuring velocity at a different spot. Everybody's velocity in the major leagues is up.
Yeah.
His is down.
He's pitching even slower. Nah, you know what, Kyle Hendricks, oh boy. I mean, the pendulum has swung completely in the opposite direction. Like I would talk about earlier, buying last year's trash. Sometimes you can overpay for last year's good producers, and that could be the case with Kyle Hendricks right now. The ERA sitting over 6 last night, the walks, the home runs, he's really shaky right now.
As someone who invested in Kyle Hendricks as a safe, solid number two starting pitcher, the velo is concerning. I'm not going to lie to that. It's only 3 starts, though. Last season, he didn't get off to the greatest start neither. I'm hoping that this is a guy who, as it progresses, the velocity comes back a little. Doesn't seem to be the case early on. That like I said, that's putting up a red flag for me. Nothing I can do. I'm not going to cut the guy. I'm not really going to bench him neither. I mean, I watched the game yesterday. I was watching the game on TV, and I do like to put the MLB app up as well, because if you do like the pitch by pitch.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that lives on the edges. It's a game of inches for him.
Yeah.
He needs that corner call. And there was a couple that were like, they were borderline. They could have went for a strike. They could have went for a ball. When he doesn't get those calls, that's going to hurt him. So, I mean, look, he's pitching on the Cubs. I am somewhat nervous, but...
But he's also not a guy given, you know, we always look for buy low opportunities every April in trading leagues where you can go and grab somebody that maybe is pissing off his owners. Kyle Hendricks is one of those guys, but given the velocity issues, it's not like he's getting unlucky. It says he's not pitching hard enough anymore, and that scares the heck out of me, and he's just not somebody I'm going to go out and try to trade for right now.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be an easy task to take that leap of faith when you see, like I said, this guy was never a fireball. But when even, I mean, 88 to say 86 is a tremendous drop. That's a big difference. Because, I mean, that affects all his other pitches.
Exactly.
So, you know, that discrepancy in speed, you know, it means a lot. On the flip side, if somebody's really nervous and want to get him away, and you can get him for a good price, I think I might take that chance. I mean, Cubs pitcher, it's early. They kind of pushed him back. He had a bigger workload. We'll see.
You think he's hurt?
I don't know if he's hurt. I think maybe it's more of a workload issue.
Exactly what I was going to say. All the innings from the last 2 years have caught up to him. Mm-hmm. Which is possible. Naftali Feliz blows his first save of the year yesterday thanks to Addison Russell. Russell had his second home run, a 3-run bomb in the 9th inning to win it for the Cubbies. And Russell finishes the day 2 for 4. He has 4 ribbies. Not only did he steal his second base, he obviously hit that second homer as well. Russell off to a start that you kind of expected, I think. At 254 with the average, 290 OBP. You'll get some power. You get a little bit of speed. That's Addison Russell for you. Anthony Rizzo steals his third base of the year, while Albert Almora, your guy, Modica, hits his first home run.
I mean, Albert Almora is a hell of a young talent. I mean, I just defensively alone, the dude is a stud. And that was a nice shot that he hit. So, I mean, they're going to try to work him in. It's just right now, he's the young guy on a team that just won the World Series.
Yeah.
Has a loaded lineup. So he's, I mean, look, if you can have a bench player, like Albert, I mean, people are going to say, well, he's young, he shouldn't be a bench player. But, you know, he's with the team. He's going to get at bats. Joe Maddon will work his magic, get him in there. But, I mean, look, if you're an Addison Russell fan, I just want to tap on this point. It, seeing where he's batting is kind of a good thing. I mean, Maddon has had no hesitation putting him in the cleanup spot and stuff. I mean, last year he spent a lot of time batting in the bottom of the order. I mean, look, he hit 21 home runs last year. I don't see why he can't at least repeat that. I mean, he had 21.95 last year, and he was more towards the bottom. I'd be pretty excited.
Corey, when you went to the Yankee game two nights ago, where were you sitting?
I sat in home run alley, section 134, row 3.
Right field, left field?
Right field.
Well, too bad you were in home run alley left field, which really wasn't home run alley. I'll explain the other side of the break. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So I was watching the Yankee game last night. I know you had your kids there, Corey. So did you have a chance to check it out?
I had them kids were driving me crazy last night. I couldn't do too much of nothing. So I was getting everybody. We went and got some Chinese food, you know what I mean? Got everybody situated. Yep. Got everybody bathed. Everybody laid down. Then I had me a brewski, you know what I'm saying?
Long day.
And it was brutal, you know what I'm saying? But it was productive.
Absolutely. So I got home. I had a long day here yesterday, and I got home, and I heated up some dinner. I put on the Yankee game. And I'm watching it, and I was watching my man Avisel Garcia, because they're facing the Yankees. And Avisel didn't get a hit yesterday, but he walked twice, so it was cool. All good. All good. And Starlin Castro hits his 3-run bomb to basically break the game open in the fifth. It went from a 4-1 game to a 7-1 game very quickly. And that was great. And Starlin Castro, he's very hot right now. It was, you know, 3 RBIs. He was 1-for-2 on the day, batting 368. It was awesome. Aaron Hicks later actually pinch hit for Castro, which is crazy. And he also had a homer. So Girardi pulling all the right buttons. And then Aaron Judge stepped up. And I turned to my roommate for a second, and I was just talking to him. And I looked back, and Judge just launched one. And I thought at the time there was a chance it was leaving Yankee Stadium. Like I know you're laughing and you think it's hysterical. I swear to you, when I saw that hit, I thought it was leaving the stadium.
I gotta watch it on MLB.
Yeah, you gotta check it out.
Just Google it right now. And he launches this thing, and you know you have like home run alley, the lower level of the bleachers on both right side, right field and left field, Core?
Yeah, I was sitting in left field the other night. And I'm sorry.
You were in left field.
I was in left field.
So this went in left field. Not the lower level where the home runs go.
Yeah.
The higher level where the home runs don't reach.
Yeah.
Frank Stample was telling me, this is where he sits for his games. He goes, home runs don't get there. And you had the back wall, which I thought was going to reach. It didn't. And then past that, then you leave the stadium. He was not that far off. Matt, 116 miles an hour off the bat. I think the final total approximately was 448 feet. That was insane.
No, I saw a different one.
Yeah, when I first saw him 2 years ago at first pitch at the Arizona Fall League, he looked like Mike Stanton in a Yankees uniform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has that type of power. A fun guy to watch. I mean, for Yankee fans, once again, this is another guy that's, you just have to enjoy watching him play. You're hoping Greg Bird gets it going. It's still early. But without Gary Sanchez, with Greg Bird struggling, Aaron Judge has been a nice surprise.
Oh, my. Look at this. this is going to be on the Grand Concourse. Oh, it just missed the Grand Concourse.
Correct. Yeah. That's how far he hit it. I don't ever care about the home run derby unless I wind up betting on it, and then I care. I want to see Aaron Judge in this home run derby against Giancarlo Stanton. Like, make Judge the captain of the AL, Stanton the captain of the NL, and let's go mano a mano here.
Yeah, I mean, I think those two guys should definitely be there. I mean, and then maybe you put like a Miguel Sano and Ozuna as well.
Eric Thames.
I don't want Eric Thames to get
me. Listen, relax, Greg. Relax. You need Eric Thames for other purposes, Greg.
Yeah.
Home run. Wow, it's a bomb.
Outside of Aaron Judge's bomb, as I said, starring Castro, Aaron Hicks also both hit home runs, and so did Chase Headley, man. His third home run of the year. That came in the first inning. Dylan Covey got off to a brutal start there. 396 for the guy that was previously known for the as Yankees fans as the bum.
Yeah, I mean, look, Chase Headley's a guy that if after, say, that first week you saw him looking pretty good, you took a shot, you had an injury. Say you were an Adrian Beltre owner in a deeper league, and you picked up Chase Headley. That's gold. This guy's OPS is like 1150. I mean, I don't know how much longer he can sustain this. Looks a little different approach, possibly. I mean, I'm not buying him as being real for the rest of the season, but could he be better than he's been previously? Absolutely.
What you also loved to see last night was Masahiro Tanaka. Tanaka, seven innings, six hits, just one run, walked a couple, six strikeouts, 96 pitches. Of course, it's easy when you're pitching to a 7-1 lead. Tanaka looked good, Matt.
Tanaka looked good, yeah. Definitely Tanaka owner fans rejoice. It's what you want to see. It's what you needed to see. And like I said, this is a guy that knows how to pitch at Yankee Stadium, knows how to pitch in the American League. It's tough watching your pitchers fail.
Yeah.
One time, watching them fail twice. You know, it really does drive you a little nuts, but that's why, you know, you always got to look at the end game, 30 starts.
Each start is getting better since that disaster that he threw out there on opening day. So if you're a Masahiro Tanaka owner like I am in the National Fantasy Baseball Championship, then I'm starting to be satisfied. Listen, the ERA and everything is still high after that disastrous first outing, but starting to get in line, so we know what we get from Tanaka each and every year. It's all about that elbow holding up.
It was a good baseball night for you, Corey, because the Yankees won, and sort of
the Mets lost.
No, the Mets won, but so did your Washington Nationals.
Oh, yes.
And not only did the Washington Nationals win.
My guy.
Your guy, Bryce Harper, went crazy. Four for four, three runs, five ribbies. He had a solo shot in the first, and then one inning later against Julio Teheran, a grand salami, and that one also was a bomb. Harper off to an incredibly hot start for the Nats here, 404 with a 516 OBP. And then your guy, Joe Ross, you've been waiting on. You spent a tons of fab on Matt. Seven innings, six hits, three runs, seven strikeouts in his 2017 debut.
Joe, this game I was kind of watching very closely as well. I mean, I had the Met game on the big screen, on the iPad. I had Joe Ross. The first inning was a bit shaky, but he settled down. He finished strong, and he actually they were saying maybe he'll come out for the eighth inning. I was like, please no, please no. He pitched 100 innings. He did a good job.
Please, Dusty, leave him out.
Come on, let's not push it. But no, I was very happy about that. I mean, Bryce Harper owns Julio Teheran. That's his seventh career homer with the two he put in last night. Harper's a guy I said was my NL MVP in my biggest money league. I had the seventh pick. Kershaw fell to me. I went Harper.
You know what? Harper's one of the dudes, man. I was going to ask you, when you was out in Vegas for the NFBC, was he going one overall in any of those last drafts?
No. I took him fifth in the Vegas main.
Yeah.
And like I said, a couple days prior to that, on my online league, that big league, I took him seventh over Kershaw.
414-foot home run for Harper on the Grand Slam, but Fred Freeman hit a 424-foot bomb last night, too.
Three homers in the last 2 days here for Freddie Freeman, who's scorching the ball. He actually has as many home runs here in 2017 as Bryce Harper does.
What was that song, the Willie Beeman song? Just put like Freddie Freeman.
Yeah. Willie Beeman.
Yeah, just put like Freddie Freeman in there. It fits so nicely.
I keep the girls dreaming. Freddie Freeman.
That was good.
I like it.
I like that, Matt.
That's a promo for Vona.
Oh, here it is. He's right on it.
Yeah, look at that. Willie Beeman.
Freddie Freeman.
We got the Willie Beeman jersey in the corner.
In the corner, dude.
You know what? Studio. You know, dude, we got to do the Freddie Freeman, Willie Beeman, Freddie Freeman remix. You know what's interesting? Any Given Sunday might be the best football movie ever made. I just throw that out there right quick.
Yeah, absolutely. It's up there. It's in the conversation.
It's in the conversation.
I agree with that for sure.
I love it.
I do love the original Longest Yard. The Adam Sandler one.
Yeah.
You're right.
Adam Sandler
best Adam Sandler
too.
Football movie is Waterboy.
Come on. It's nothing better than Waterboy.
There's no argument there.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be like enhanced to watch an Adam Sandler movie. let's be honest.
It's 420, Matt.
Adam Sandler Day.
Adam Sandler Day. Wow.
Julio Teheran, four innings, seven hits, seven runs, three walks, three strikeouts.
Two big home runs, obviously, putting people on base. Julio Teheran, still a solid contributor for your fantasy teams, but when this Washington team and Harper gets rolling, they can be tough on anybody. So Julio Teheran, four innings yesterday, giving up seven earned.
Yeah, real quick. Julio Teheran versus the Nationals is kind of like Jose Quintana versus the Tigers. Mm. These are not good matchups.
For whatever reason. So yesterday morning, we looked at this Toronto-Baltimore matchup with Francisco Liriano and Rick Porcello. And to be honest with you, I thought it was going to be a high-scoring affair, two good offenses, or really one good offense in the Blue Jays. And I thought that Liriano, with Russell Martin, like, would we see it again? Is there a thing here? And I asked Jake Seeley about this last week, and he goes, yes. I know it's not something I want to believe in, but there's something here. Well, it reared its head again yesterday. Liriano, Russell Martin, it's real. And we'll talk about it on the other side of the break, as well as getting a whole lot of other stuff for hour number two of the Roto Expert. Stick around. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Number two of the Roto Experts in the Morning is live here with you. Only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. CTM Baseball's Matt Modica, the Fantasy Executive Corey Parson with you, Greg Sussman as well. We got one more hour in the OGs coming your way, coming up next. Last night, Boston and Toronto, an AL East battle. Francisco Liriano, Rick Porcello. Two really interesting names, Matt, when it comes to fantasy baseball, because nobody wants Rick Porcello, because, as you were saying just a second ago, Corey, yes, it's a great year last year. Everyone kind of expects the downturn.
Exactly.
Francisco Liriano was a name that kind of went up and down this spring, and I think ended on the upswing, had a really bad first start, but Russell Martin wasn't behind the plate. Since that outing, Martin's been behind the plate each and every game. Since that outing, Francisco Liriano's been one hell of a lot better. 5 1/3 last night, 4 hits, just 1 walk. He struck out 6. Liriano, Russell Martin, this combination works.
Yeah, I mean, I think John Gibbons got the message. I mean, if he didn't, then he's a moron. But I mean, no, seriously, I mean, these guys have a track record. It goes back to Pittsburgh. Goes back to last season when he arrived in Toronto. And you've seen it in the starts he's done with Martin this season. So I don't think there's going to be an issue going forward. Liriano owners have to be happy now that these two are reunited. They're like perfect strangers. If you ever remember that show, maybe I'm dating myself.
That was a good one.
I know Stranger Things. That helps.
I have to check that out.
Yeah, it's up here. You like it. For Boston, Mick Porcello, 7 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 5 strikeouts. Eduardo Rodriguez returns from the paternity leave list. They wanted to get in an inning of work before he starts this weekend. Rodriguez, perfect inning, 2 strikeouts.
Yeah, the thing I want to concentrate here on, though, is Porcello. As you mentioned, nobody's going out of their way to get Porcello. Was he a Cy Young pitcher last year?
Yes.
You know,
I mean, he won the joint.
He won the award, but is he like? I'll use a different term. Is he a perennial Cy Young Award winner? Absolutely not. But he is a guy, in my opinion, who's a very good number three fantasy guy. And I hear on some shows where they try and say that errors should be banned, and I think that's just moronic. I mean, this guy pitched a hell of a game last night. He did not deserve to have any earned runs against him. I mean, Panda, Moreland, they were just like booting the ball like a little league team. It was a fantastic outing for Rick Porcello, and he's a guy that if you can get at a discount right now, I'm buying, because he's a solid middle guy in your rotation that's going to give you the innings, give you the wins, and you'll be happy at season's end.
Absolutely. Hitting-wise, nobody had more than a single in Boston's lineup, just all singles all the way around. For Toronto, big night for Kevin Pillar. It's a name we have not mentioned in a while on the Roto Experts. 2 stolen bases, his first 2 of the year. He's on my GST team, just saying. Pillar, nice. Led off, 3-for-4, 345 average, 368 OBP. Now, with Josh Donaldson out, Jose Bautista really, really struggling. Troy Tulowitzki struggling as well. This whole offense in general for Toronto just being bad. Pilar's been a bright spot. Is he a name more people should know, Corey?
I think so. We saw what he was able to do at times last season. Now, health can tend to be an issue for Pilar. So I think that fantasy owners should get on involved with him right now. It's early in the season, hitting 345, 368 is the OBP. But I am a fan. And he stole you two bases last night, too. But the rest of the lineup is really scuffling right now. Really scuffling.
Yeah, it's really sad when Darwin Barney's like your RBI guy driving in the runs. I mean, to his credit, he's batting, what, 389?
Playing good, though.
Yeah, no, he is. But, I mean, that's not what – I mean, look, the lineup is just a shell of itself. The, you know, it's a bunch of swing and miss. Pilar usually gets overlooked offensively as well because he's so good playing center field. I mean, that's his claim to fame. That's his thing.
Well, when you bring up Kevin Pillar and how good he is playing center field and the speed and getting overlooked for his bat, that reminds me of another center fielder named Kevin.
I know where we're going there, but before you go there, one quick note on this game. Mookie Betts finally struck out.
First time in 129 at-bats, Betts has struck out. But the other Kevin, the other center fielder, Corey, that's Kevin Kiermaier, of course, who led the Rays last night to the comeback against the Detroit Tigers, 8-7.
Another one of your guys.
Kevin Kiermaier, another one of my guys. I stole that from Modica, though. Like, Modica was basically all in on Kiermaier. And I don't know why, Matt. Like, we speak about a million players every day. But Kiermaier during the spring was, like, the one guy that stuck with me that, like, I drafted everywhere because he was one of the guys you really liked, Lee. So I drafted him everywhere, even over, like, guys like Odubel. But Kiermaier, 3-for-4 with 4 runs scored last night. Every time he was on base, he came around to score, and the Rays defeated the Tigers by the score of 8-7. Chris Archer, 5 innings, 7 hits, 4 runs, struck out 9, while Jordan Zimmermann allowed 10 hits, 5 runs. He struck out 4 for the Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just to touch on it real quick, the reason I did like Kiermaier a lot was it was the power-speed combo. He's been very successful on the bases. I think he's got more power upside than he's shown. And just to look at it, I'm looking at guys like Byron Buxton and Keon Broxton that were going ahead of him. And a couple of rounds later, I'm getting a guy that I know is going to play every day because he is what I call love glove. I mean, he's just an amazing defender, except for that one route he took last night on the Nick Castellano. That turned into a triple.
That wasn't his best. It wasn't his best. But that's okay. So he was 3-for-4 with 4 runs scored. No surprise, Evan Longoria, 3-for-4 behind him with 3 RBI. Corey Dickerson, I'll tell you what, Kevin Cash doing something right with this guy and this team. Like, we all laughed and questioned why the heck Corey Dickerson is batting leadoff for this team, and he's had a very, very nice start to the year,
Getting it done, 322 is the average early in the season, on base at three, sitting at 365. Obviously, listen, he got thrown out the game last night in the ninth inning for arguing a call. But Dickerson play was very good so far. It's been working out for the Tampa Bay Rays. And my guy Archer last night, too. I had, between Archer and Amir Garrett, I had like 21 Ks last night.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Another night at the office.
Brad Miller is 2-for-4. And for those wondering why he's still batting cleanup, he got that OBP at 344. And then Steven Souza, last night was 2-for-5, had a couple of RBIs. And Souza's a really interesting name because we talk about, like, post-hype prospects. And, like, we mentioned this spring, Byron Buxton, Jose Barrios, as post-hype guys that you're excited about. But Steven Souza, I believe, better fits that category. Because it was just a couple of years ago, remember, that Will Myers was traded for Trey Turner and Steven Souza.
And don't forget my boy Joe Ross.
And Joe Ross, right? Like, that was a monster trade when you look back at it. But Steven Souza is 27 years old. And if you just look at the amount of games he has played in his career, it's never really been a full season. He had 120 last year. He had 110 the year before. He hasn't gotten anywhere past that. Last season, in 120 games, he batted just .247, but he did have 17 home runs and 7 stolen bases. Now, if you extrapolate that for a full season, you're going to get better numbers, and you hope that the average goes up a little bit. Now, while his BABIP was high last year at .348, and it's extremely high now at .436, Steven Souza is a guy that I think really has some post-hype appeal, and I wish I was in earlier on him.
He's been a sabermetrics darling in the past. I don't know if it was like Steamer or like Baseball Prospectus. They were really hiring him a couple of years ago. They put out some really nice projections for him. And it hasn't all come together. But like you said, this is a young guy. You got to go through. You got to stay healthy too. Stay on the field and all that good stuff. So yeah, I mean, if you take a shot on Sousa, you have to be. You have to be pleasantly surprised.
Health is the key part of what you're going to get from his production. But right now, early in the season, what he's slashing 320, 424, 520. This looks like a potential breakout season on the horizon right here if he can stay healthy.
I mean, a 928 OPS is nothing to sneeze at.
No, nothing at all. It's legit, man. It's completely legit. For Detroit yesterday, 3-for-4 was Miguel Cabrera. Nick Castellanos, 2-for-5 with 2 triples. You don't see that every day.
You don't, and you don't see Kevin Kiermaier take a terrible
run. No, you don't. That's almost more rare. Ian Kinsler steals his first base of the year.
My guy, though. Sunshine.
Sunshine.
Sunshine struck out 3 times yesterday. I'm about to put Sunshine ass on my bench. I'm getting sick of Sunshine.
Sunshine's about to take a ride to the minors.
Exactly. Sunshine is, because my man J.D. Martinez took batting practice on the field the other day. So that lets me know he's getting ready to come back. Dr. A or B on Old School Fantasy with us coming up at the top of the hour. So we'll talk about that and a whole bunch of other injury stuff. He's going to be joining myself and Matt Matica. But now, what Sunshine is scuffling right now, batting 182. I need to get J.D. Martinez back.
And Sunshine off your team.
And I need to get Sunshine off my team, yes. He's holding up a roster spot right now.
The Tigers, of course, fall because Francisco Rodriguez blows his second save of the year. Now, you would think that he would be in a little bit of hot water here, but I wonder who's next, because we've talked about Joe Jimenez as the likely future closer. He's in the minors. He's not coming up and becoming the closer. The guy that pitches the eighth inning for Detroit is Justin Wilson. 0 ERA, struck out the side last night in the eighth. He's pitched phenomenally well. Do you think they would give Justin Wilson a shot at closing?
Well, this is what I think is going to happen, but before that, look, he did not pitch well again last night, K-Rod. He's been craptastic.
But Jose Iglesias blew this for him.
Yeah, I mean, Iglesias tripped, threw it away, but he did put himself in a terrible situation. I mean, every game I watch K-Rod pitch, it just gets worse and worse. I mean, the fastball and the changeup are almost like mirror image right now. The thing with Joe Jimenez is, I think he's pitched like 40 innings above high A. I mean, you're asking a lot for this kid. Everybody's in love with him. I get it. Even in the WB, you've seen some flashes of this kid's upside. There's no denying that. Justin Wilson, I think, probably gets like the first shot, but I think it's more of a committee style because Justin Wilson's also a left-hander. A lot of managers don't feel comfortable with a lefty, and you got Alex there too. So maybe it's a little mix and match. Also, I think K-Rod's leash is still a little longer. They really don't want to have to remove him from the closer role. But as we saw in Texas, sometimes the hand is forced.
Yeah, sometimes you have absolutely no choice, which is how we wound up with Matt Bush as the closer in Texas. I'm excited to see that era begin. Last night, the Dodgers defeated Colorado 4-2 because Clayton Kershaw saw his ERA actually rise from, I believe, 2.53 to 2.54 now. So that was a big rise for him. Kershaw, 7 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs. He struck out 10 Colorado Rockies, and he actually got ticked off. Did any of you guys see this?
Like, no, what happened? What he was upset about?
So game time for Colorado for this game starts at 7:10,
yeah.
West Coast time, right? So 10:10 for us.
Yeah, late.
But so he's on the mound. He's throwing his warm-up pitches and whatnot. And, of course, he pitches first because the Dodgers are home. So he gets on the mound first. But the Rockies starter, Tyler Anderson, at 7:10 just starts making his way from the bullpen back to the dugout.
Yeah.
And Kershaw's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, the game started. He threw his warm-up pitches. He's ready to go. And Tyler Anderson starts walking from the bullpen.
Oh, he was trying to do a little gamesmanship. Yeah, you're trying to
and
do a little gamesmanship.
So Kershaw's like, listen, the game starts at 7:10. Either finish your warm-ups early, come in for the bullpen when you're ready to go if you want to be warm up at the last second. Don't you dare when I'm ready to pitch. We'll start walking on the field.
Yeah, so it's a little gamesmanship, right? So this is the National League. So you know what
National
I'd have done?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'd done if I was Clayton Kershaw?
Hit him.
I would have hit him.
You know what? I probably would have started the game and just hit Charlie Blackman just to get that point.
Well, I wouldn't
point
hit Charlie right away. He's fast. He's fast.
Charlie Blackman's on my Top Wars team, Matt. Do not.
I'm not saying hurt him.
Don't hit him. Don't even hit him.
You can hit him, you know, down low. Hit him in the butt or something.
We don't want no problems.
I would have sent the message right away, like, don't ever do this again. Otherwise, you know, next time it's you.
Yeah. No, I'd have hit him. Somebody would have got hit. Not Charlie Blackman, you know, not a guy I'm invested in, but I'd have hit him. Because
hit the pitcher.
You know, if he wants to do a little gamesmanship, so I would have hit him.
Right.
I wasn't going to try to hurt him. I wasn't going high and tight. Bow, right there. And then if he wanted to beef, then we could have figured it out.
Well, Kershaw pitched much better than him because Tyler Anderson went 5 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs. Only two of them were earned. He struck out 5-4. The Dodgers last night, you got a 2-for-4 game from Kiki Hernandez, 2-for-4 with the runs scored. Two hits also for Chris Taylor, who started at second base. No Chase Utley last night, which surprised me. But it was Chris Taylor starting at second base for Logan Forsythe, who actually broke his big toe, which is going to keep him out, Matt.
Yep.
Yeah, as a Logan Forsythe owner in multiple leagues, not good news to hear. Hopefully, Colton Wong could ever do something, and I can take him. You know, I'm probably going to have to put him in now, which isn't encouraging. But, I mean, the one thing watching the game, I did catch a little of it before I went to sleep. I did get to see Corey Seager get a base hit RBI, and I was thinking of you.
So that's where I was going next, obviously, with Corey Seager. So he figured out a way not to strike out. Just swing at every first pitch and try to make contact. 7 pitches, 4 at-bats last night for Corey Seager.
That's horrible.
That's less than 2 pitches per at-bat.
Yeah.
So you know. But an RBI single, as Matt said, so that was cool. For Colorado, Nolan Arenado stole a base.
Nolan Arenado's just a tremendous player.
Yeah.
He's just good.
2-for-4 last night was DJ LeMay. 1-for-3 was Charlie Blackman. Trevor Story, he also had a hit as well.
He also struck out 3 times.
Well, he always strikes out 3 times. Is he on your Towers team? He's not on your Towers team, is he?
No, I'm not going to have a guy on my team that's batting 135. I know the MO with this kid. I understand the power is excellent, but I don't trust him.
Well, the good news in this game is the x-rays came back negative on Cargo after he got hit by a pitch.
That's right. Carlos Gonzalez gets hit in the hand with a Clayton Kershaw pitch. He was writhing in pain. That was an issue. And had an x-ray negative. He's day-to-day. We talked about Cargo yesterday on the BFFs, how he was struggling really to start off the season. But Tony mentioned it this morning on Cicada and Angle that you were just happy he was playing. Like, Cargo, you always have an injury.
Yep.
Always a slow starter. Cargo is. Last 2 years, very, very slow starts and finished with excellent numbers. And the big news yesterday, of course, is that it looks like he survived his hand injury.
Yeah, I think that's the key. As long as he can survive a hand injury here, because that would be real scary. As you stated, notorious slow start in the last couple of seasons. It wasn't until, was it 2015, where like July on, he hit like 30-something home runs. So, I mean, you just want health. You want these guys, once April ends, Coors Field will play a lot differently, and you'll see these guys' numbers just spike.
Start to explode.
We take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Arizona and San Diego and take your calls. 844-843-6879. 844-843-6879. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Of course, always taking your calls at 844-843-6879. Feel free to tweet the show as well at FNTSY Radio, at CTM Baseball for Matt Modica, at The Fantasy Exec for Corey Parson, and at Craig Sussman for me. We take your calls at 844-843-6879. But we get back to baseball before that with the Padres and the Diamondbacks in an incredibly pitched game, which I don't think any of us saw coming. It was Yolis Chacin, 8 innings, 3 hits, a walk, 5 strikeouts in a victory for San Diego. Zach Greinke pitches a complete game, 5-hitter, 8 innings, 5 hits, 1 run. He struck out 6.
Yeah, this isn't old Petco, but you still have that marine layer in California and stuff. And as you said, tremendously pitched game. Greinke, I mean, if you own Greinke, you really needed him to have this outing. And even looking back at yesterday, when we talked about Shelby Miller, both these guys came through. They passed the test that you at least have to pitch well at Petco versus this Padre offense. Now, going forward, how do we feel? I mean, I think Greinke can figure it out. Even if the velo's down a little, I think he can still work with that. You know, he's a cerebral guy, has gotten it done his whole career. I would spec on Miller as well. And on the flip side, I mean, Julio Chacin, this is not his first good outing of the year. It started off with that horrific beginning at Chavez Ravine. but things are turning positive for him.
He's throwing strikes last night, and that and I think that was the key to his success last night. But his command could get to be a problem at times, so you know, be careful.
The one other interesting name, you spoke about Shelby Miller just a second ago, and of course Zach Greinke last night with what he did. Patrick Corbin today at Petco. That's one I'm watching. It's the third game of the series. It takes place tonight. And Corbin's a name that the numbers have been okay. Like, the stats ultimately have been fine this year, but it's almost like he's skating by. Tonight, Petco's an interesting start for him.
Yes, this will highlight it again. You definitely, if you're a Corbin owner, you're intently watching this game. But also, the other guy on the team, Archie Bradley, I know people want to see him come into the rotation if the opportunity arises. I kind of want to see him, if the opportunity arises, I want to see him be the closer of this team.
I know you mentioned that.
I think that might be the yep. spot for him.
And also Archie Bradley is a potential closer as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I mean. Bradley as the closer.
Oh, I think you're talking about Corbin as the closer. Yeah. That's why I got a little confused.
Okay. I mean, Corbin has that potential as well. I think both those guys, we're still trying to figure out, as Arizona is, where does their destiny lie?
Yep, absolutely. A.J. Pollock, this dude steals every day now. He's always running. He was 2-for-3, gets on base. He's third stolen base of the year, 286 average, 328 OBP. Jake Lamb, Brandon Drury, the other hits. The only reason this game, the Diamondbacks lost probably is because Yasmani Tomas didn't play, right? Like, that has to be the reason?
I got to agree with you there. I mean, yeah. I think that's the reason. Those haters, whatever they wrote up about Tomas the other day, you know, that was blasphemy. But, you know, Pollock is a guy where it's all about health for him. This guy, if he gets the at-bats, plays the games, this is a guy with tremendous talent, a guy that can get it done for you with some power, the speed's there, the average runs, everything you pretty much want, he can deliver. On the flip side, a guy that I'm really liking, I have some shares, wish I had more, was Manny Margot. He got thrown out again. Not happy to see that.
No, it's the second time he's got caught stealing this year. The only run scored in this game was an Eric Ibar home run. One day after he finished the game pitching, he comes out and hits the game-winning home run in the eighth inning for Zach, off of Zach Greinke. 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. Let's go to Bob in Long Island. Bob, what's going on?
Gentlemen, good morning. How are we doing today?
Excellent, Rory,
what's
Bob.
Going on?
Bob, what's going on, my man?
Good morning, Bob.
Bob, what's going on, my man?
Good morning. Yeah, not much, man. You know, just hanging out. Just figured I'd listen to your show for a while. I got a trade the other day I want to ask you about, guys. I don't know. You know, I'm trying to. Maybe I'm ribbing a straw here, but I needed some bases. But I traded Carrasco and Swanson for Lorenzo Cain and Brett Anderson, and of course I got stuck with his start the other night, you know, and it killed me. But what do you think of that trade, guys?
Well, I mean, I think the trade is basically you traded Carrasco for Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah,
essentially.
That's really the thing. I mean, Brett Anderson
stinks.
Brett Anderson, his value is that he pitches for the Cubs right now and how long he can stay healthy. But I mean, Lorenzo Cain looks like a perfect bounce-back player. I think he stole his fifth base last night. So, I mean, I think it's fair in the fact that you were looking to obtain some steals. You're going to get average with him. He's going to hit some homers for you. Carrasco is a guy that I like. The key to Carrasco, I mean, as well as Cain has this kind of issue too, is just staying healthy.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Greg.
No. I was basically agreeing with Matt with that Carlos Carrasco. It's all about staying healthy with him, and it's all about, because Lorenzo Cain, you know what you're going to get, right? Corey likes to stay back in the baseball card guy. That's what I feel like Lorenzo Cain is at this point. But both these guys, though, they got to stay healthy. I think both will provide what you expect. If he needs total bases, I don't really have an issue with the move.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. Like, okay. I said, it all depends on your team. What kind of league are you in, Bob? Is it a 12 team? Is it an OBP? Is it a
It's a 15 roto. Okay. It's a 15 roto. So I mean, there's not much out there on the waiver wire. There's nothing there really. Tell you the truth, you know.
Hey, Bob.
And, what kind of? You know, yeah.
Hey, Bob, we got Dr. Ago being with us on old school next. How's your hip doing?
No, it's my knee, man.
Oh, your knee. Sorry, Bob. I haven't talked to you in a while. The knee's still banged
still
up,
bad.
Huh?
I know you haven't seen your old man in a long time, but, yeah, no, it's my knee, man. You know, yeah, it's still my knee. Yeah, I'm still banged up. What are you saying? Yeah, it's never going to go away. The guy screwed it up on me. That's all.
Oh, my goodness.
What are you going to do? You got to live with it. What are you going
to
do?
I'm sorry to hear that, Bob. I hope you know. You're big and you're tall, and you're kind of like, you know, you're a bigger guy, so you put a lot of weight on the knee. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. And Dr. A would agree
with that.
I'm going to bring the skeleton over at 10 o'clock when me and Matt get rolling with Dr. A. We're going to have the skeleton up. It's going to be excellent.
It's going to be awesome. Dr. A, of course, joins the old school fantasy hour coming up next, 10 a.m. Eastern time here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So we've kind of avoided the negatives from last night. We've been all about positives and happiness. And I know we mentioned Cargo's injury. And we kind of brushed over Jason Wirth leaving the game last night for Washington with a Dusty described it as very funny. It was like not groin soreness, but like not even groin discomfort, like groin, like shakiness. I'll get you the exact term in a second. But something ridiculous is Jason Wirth. But the real negatives was with your New York Mets, Matt. We'll take a break and we'll get into what happened there, where the guys that always get injured got injured. Stick around. More Roto Experts coming your way next. We are back here on the Roto Experts in the morning. Remember, as we said, Dr. A sits in with the OGs all morning long. Whole hour, that'll be fun. Corey Parson, Matt Bodica, you're sitting in too without Scott Engel here. You will, you'll be with the OGs, George Kurtz as well. It's going to be a fun show coming up at 10 a.m. Eastern time.
That it will be. I'm excited. We have many questions to ask the good doctor.
Absolutely. And we were just talking to Dr. A, who's in studio with us, and did you sense some giddiness that Justin Upton was hurt? Like I said, I kind of sensed some excitement about it.
It's kind of like when you're predicting, you know, you're on a guy.
Right.
So, you know, I can understand it.
Yeah, I kind of sensed the excitement that Justin Upton was hurt coming from Dr. Ray, who you hear at 10 a.m. So, the New York Mets, you're the team, Matt.
Yes. Ooh. Yes, that is.
Now, Travis Darnell, Corey, correct me if I'm wrong, but this guy's always hurt.
Yeah, he's always hurt, and his name starts with a little D.
Little D, not a big D, little D. Right.
Little D to start his name always
freaks
me out.
That might be the problem.
Always, no, when I see the guys with the little D, it always freaks me out. Like, why does your name have a little D in it?
Now, Travis Darnell got hurt in perhaps the flukiest way last night. He's throwing the ball back, and like he hit like the bat of the hitter.
Yeah.
And now he had to leave the game.
That should have been interference, in my opinion, but hey.
It's okay. We're going to talk to the doc about this.
Yes.
Because I hate to label people as injury prone.
Okay.
But some people are just injury prone. You feel what I'm saying?
They're brittle.
But no, but see, a doctor's not going to say, he's going to have a scientific term for it. You have to find out what that term is.
So now you can start using it. It sounds smart.
I think it's called gronking.
Gronking.
Like Rob Gronkowski?
Right.
Gronking when you're injury prone.
But how do you know? Isn't gronking like
Being in Vegas,
interrupting Sean Spicer, like that kind of stuff.
I saw you interrupted Sean Spicer yesterday.
That was pretty funny.
That was very funny. But he isn't the only injury-prone Met. Lucas Duda has missed a lot of time in recent years, and this is actually the injury that scares me more because, all right, listen, if Travis Darnell is out for a significant period of time, like maybe he broke his hand, I don't know. But if he's out, Rene Rivera is arguably the better catcher. Forget hitting. Catcher. Probably not even arguably. He is a better catcher at this point in his career than Darnell. He calls a better game. He throws it better. He's got a better arm. This pitching staff, which is the most important thing on the Mets by far, is in good hands if Rene Rivera is behind home plate. At first base, you have Lucas Duda, who is a reliable, if nothing else, power bat in the middle of the order. Now, Duda is going to have tests done on his elbow. It could be just tendonitis in the elbow, and it'll be fine. We'll be back in 2 days. It could be a dislocated elbow where it will take him a month or two to come back. Or it could just be a broken elbow when he's done for the year. All of these possibilities, I believe, still remain on the table for Lucas Duda. Now, if he is hurt for a significant period of time, I have to think that Wilmer Flores will continue to play first base against lefties. And then they're going to do this lineup where I believe they're going to try Jay Bruce at first and get Conforto in there every day, which I know Mets fans like yourself, Matt, are clamoring for. What do you think of this Duda injury, and what do you think of the backup plans?
Well, the due to injury to start it off, I mean, it was a shame because there was nothing he could do. It was a bad throw. And, you know, at first base, if you don't make the correct throws, you can really break somebody's arm. Like, you know, it's really – it could get ugly real quick over there. The backup plans, if Jay Bruce can play first base, then I'm actually really excited for it. To me, though, the guy that should have been sitting anyway for Conforto was Grandison. Jay Bruce is hot. I tweeted out last night that he's actually trolling Met fans to start off the 2017 season. I mean, we all hated him, and now everybody loves him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hitting two homers a night. He's got about six. He's like tied with Arenado and Cespedes. So, and the other thing you mentioned with Travis d'Arnaud is Rene Rivera. There's a reason Rene Rivera is
Syndergaard's personal catcher.
Personal catcher, exactly. There's a reason why. So, I mean, on that aspect, maybe that's a plus. I do think d'Arnaud did have some potential to show us what he could do with the bat, but, I mean, it was fluky. I mean, that was just total fluky. He did nothing wrong. The bat, somehow, the guy left his bat over the plate. Bam. Now he might have a broken hand.
No, he's like one of those guys, though, where you're just waiting for the piano to fall on.
You know, exactly. You're 100% right, Corey. You're 100% right.
I'll tell you what. I don't say this often, but Jake had a really good tweet last night.
Oh, God.
I know.
I can't.
And he goes to Jake Seeley on Target coming up at 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
The award-winning.
The award-winning on Target. Don't forget that, because Jake get upset if you don't say that.
He said, quote, "I'm old enough to remember when the Mets and fantasy owners wanted nothing to do with Jay Bruce." It's a good tweet.
That is a good tweet.
You give credit where it's due. And it's true that Jay Bruce, nobody wanted anything to do with him. Two home runs last night, six, the same amount as Bryce Harper, as we said, the same amount as Freddie Freeman, as we said. And Jay Bruce is the Mets' offense right now. Without him, they would be absolutely done. Even Yoenis Cespedes has a million home runs. He does not have as high of an average as Jay Bruce has at this point. And it's funny because we look at what Jay Bruce is doing. Is it really a surprise? Like, he's a very streaky player. He's been a streaky player his entire life. The first half of last year in Cincinnati, he was unbelievable. He comes over the second half, Messi stunk. Now, he's on a hot streak again. Yeah. This is not a surprise.
It takes a little while to get used to Met fans, though. That's important. So when he come over there, he's like, these people are kind of crazy. So I guess over the summer, he warmed up to Met fans. Yeah. I still haven't, but, you know, here it is.
I do want to touch on Jay Bruce, but let's not forget, there's another thing we definitely have to hit.
Met fans?
No, Robert Gesellman.
Oh, I was getting there.
But Jay Bruce... I believe in spring training when they first reported and stuff, they were saying, they were showing some clips, how he went to Terry Collins and said, last year, that's not the player that I am. I never had that bad of a stretch in my life. I'm going to prove the player that I am this season. So, you know.
He owned it. I like that.
You know, 3 weeks in almost, it's looking good. I'll say that.
Do something about Jose Reyes, though.
Jose Reyes is pretty, in my opinion, for me, is getting very close to being DFA'd.
Wow.
You think so?
I mean, I'm getting to the point where this guy is just, he's becoming a liability in the field now. Yeah. He's not hitting. You know what? Give me Wilmer Flores. Give me TJ Rivera.
Yeah, the kid from the Bronx.
You know.
As you said, you want to talk about Robert Gesellman for good reason. 7 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs. He struck out 7 last night over 99 pitches. People kind of annoyed Robert Gesellman these days. And you were saying to me during the break, if he's someone that's available, you're running to pick him up.
Yeah, I mean, in maybe like in a 12-team league outside of New York, he's been dropped. You know, people see the ERA. I tweeted it last week. I tweeted it yesterday before the game. The pitches have looked good the first 2 games. It's about command. It's all about command. And when he can't command his pitches, even last night he got punished, and that's the one thing he's got to try and figure out, is that two-seamer to right-handers. When that ball just hangs over that plate, he's going to get hit hard. But otherwise, the movement was there. His first 6 strikeouts, I know the first guy he got swinging, the next 5 were all looking. I mean, the stuff looked crisp. And the other thing is how he gets those outs. I believe it was like 10-1 ground outs to fly balls. That's what you want to see from Gesellman.
We talked last week, I believe, about Joe Girardi's like bullpen management compared to Terry Collins. Now, the Mets have played 15 games. That's why Jairus Familia comes back today. They have played 15 games. As the Met fan, Matt, I throw it to you. How many games do you think Hanzo Robles and Jerry Blevins have pitched in out of those 15? Because I have the answer.
I think it's got to be at least 10.
On the dot. 10 out of 15 games for two guys.
Ooh. Well, another guy that should be getting DFA'd is Rafael Montero.
Montero's been very bad. On the other side of things for Philadelphia, Vinny Velasquez, 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, only struck out 2. I know you were most high on Eichhoff out of any of these guys, but what have you thought of Vincent Velasquez's early season performance?
It's been inconsistent. I mean, he shows you the flashes. He'll get games where he can only pitch 4 innings. He's striking out 10 batters. I mean, the walks have been problematic. But last night, he seems to pitch his best against the Mets. Last night, he did get into the 6th inning, throw only 84 pitches. So, I mean, he could have went further. But, I mean, look, the upside is there. You see it with Velasquez. The question is, can it translate this season?
For the Philadelphia hitters, Cesar Hernandez goes 0-for-5, strikes out 3 times, but does steal his 3rd base of the year. Freddie Galvis, 2-for-4. Cameron Rupp was 1-for-4 here on the day, while Michael Saunders was 2-for-3. St. Louis defeated Pittsburgh yesterday afternoon 2-1, and it was a really good pitching performance by both of these pitchers, Michael Wacha and Gerrit Cole. Wacha goes 6 2/3, allows 4 hits, strikes out 3, only allows 1 run, and it was Gerrit Cole that went 6 innings, allowing 6 hits, 2 runs. He struck out 8 guys, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, Gerrit Cole threw 2 bad pitches. It was both Dexter Fowler hit 2 solo home runs.
Same
off.
Same guy.
Him.
Yeah, my guy. Know?
But if you look back to the last 2 starts, I mean, Cole, 12 innings, 13 strikeouts, 3 walks. This is the pitcher that we want to see, the guy that I invested in. And I'm hoping that a big year is in store for him. I mean, he's a guy that, even though I like a lot, I'm never super confident when he's on the mound. But hopefully,
it's always an adventure with G.
Yeah.
Cole.
Yeah, that it is.
Trevor Rosenthal picks up his first save of the year. Sung Won Oh pitches in back-to-back games, which is why Rosenthal came on for the save yesterday.
Oh has struggled. Yeah. Do you think?
Yes.
He's in trouble?
Yes. Look, I have Oh, and I stated repeatedly every day, I thought he was like one of the top safe guys as far as closes. Like, if you were going to invest in somebody, Oh is a guy to invest in. Like you said, the reason Rosenthal got into that game is he had a pitch back-to-back. Rosenthal was hitting 100 yesterday, looking really good. I'm not saying he's taking his job tomorrow or next week, but he's a person of interest, a person that you're watching, and it always looked extremely bad. The strikeouts aren't there. Runs have been pretty much 4 out of like the 5 games he's pitched in. So, you know, these are things you got to watch.
Like you said, this is what you have to watch for. Sung Won Oh, everyone thought he should be the safest guy ever. Little shaky here in the early going. Couple of games left from yesterday afternoon. There was the Mariners and the Marlins. Seattle wins 10-5. Felix Fernandez let up a lot of hits yesterday. I know he gets the win, allows 4 runs, strikes out 5, pitches 6 1/3. He allowed 12 hits yesterday, Corey.
Yeah, King Felix not really looking King Felix-like, especially in the situation yesterday. I don't know. You know, one of the parts that when, as these pitchers get aging and all these innings build up on their arm, they have to learn to be a little bit more craftier. So far, so good. You know, he does still have 2 wins on the season, but you want to see a better performance, especially against the Miami Marlins.
I always look for, like, really interesting stats, and Felix Hernandez has one of my favorite of the early season so far. He has allowed 1 walk on the season and has a 1.38 whip. That's like almost impossible to do.
How does that happen?
Because he's in like 24 2/3, he's given up like 34 hits. So the thing was, last year he was more nibbling, afraid to throw the ball over the plate. This season he's kind of gone the opposite, where he's
sitting right there.
He's not afraid to throw strikes, but this is the second game where he's allowed 10 hits or more. So I wasn't a Felix guy. I like rooting for Felix. You know, he's the king.
He's cool.
I admittedly was more on Felix than some other people. I just thought he was going too late. I was like, I did a Corey Parson back of the baseball card. Listen, it's Felix Hernandez. Like,
yeah,
he's going to be fine.
Felix.
A little worried. A little worried now. The only reason Aaron Judge hit a homer 448 feet yesterday was because Giancarlo Stanton also hit one 448 feet yesterday. That was Stanton's 4th home run of the year. Christian Yelich also hit his 4th home run of the season yesterday. Yelich was 3-for-5. Stanton was 3-for-3. He walked twice. both these guys off to nice starts this year. It's good for Stanton, who is a streaky player. You want to see him get off to that hot start. On the other side for Seattle, Mitch Haniger just continues, man. 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored, 4 ribbies. It was just it's ridiculous already. Haniger also got caught stealing for the first time this season.
I think they're going to change Mitch. I think Mitch Haniger has a new nickname, Mitch Money Haniger, because this guy delivers like every day.
No, they're going to change the name of the stadium from Safeco to Haniger Field.
But one note before, I thought it was tremendous. I mean, this is stuff like, if I saw it in a movie, like if I watched The Natural, I'd be like, ah, this is so cheesy, this would never happen. Ichiro says sayonara to Safeco.
Oh, yeah, how about
in such
that?
A wonderful, wonderful
that was
way.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that was pretty cool to see that. Yeah.
You know, even, I think it was Kyle Seager said, he's like, you never root for an opposing player to hit a home run.
But we're up 10-4. And yeah. Right.
He goes, but in that moment when he did it, I had chills for him.
It was awesome. Ichiro homers in perhaps his last at-bat ever at Safeco Field, where he, you know, made his career. Again, Ichiro says he's playing for 50, so playing until 50. So maybe he'll be back at Safeco, so who knows? But
I have to ask a doctor about that.
Everyone,
if you can play till 50.
So everyone made a big deal of it, but Ichiro says he's not done this year. So, like, I wasn't going crazy over it, personally. Cano was 2-for-3. A couple of runs, scored a couple of walks. Kyle Seager breaks out a little bit after a slow start. He was 2-for-3 with 4 RBI yesterday. He also walked twice. We'll come back. I got to bring up the Mike Gundy thing before we wrap up, because it is so absurd. I love it. Roto Express wraps up right after this. Final few minutes here of the program. 10 minutes to go. And this is a great story. It's freaking awesome. So last year, Mike Gundy has a ridiculous mullet, by the way. Like, he celebrates 420 really well. And he's the guy that goes, I'm a man, I'm 40. That guy.
Des Bryant's college coach.
Des Bryant's college coach, exactly. So, now you know who we're talking about, right? We're all good here?
Mm-hmm.
So, last year, the Oklahoma State Cowboys went 10-3. It's a good year.
Decent season.
They win the Alamo Bowl against Central Michigan. 30-20. I'm sorry. They win the Alamo Bowl against Colorado to get 10-3. Evidently, you get rings for this in Oklahoma
State. Oh, I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
You got a tire on it?
Neither did I.
That's a little.
Now, the two of their losses were against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
In a rivalry matchup.
That's their rivalry.
Right.
Bedlam.
Battle of Bedlam. That's right. Lost to Oklahoma. And I believe the last game of the year before week 14, yeah. But before that, their only loss was to Baylor.
Another tough school.
Right. Well, so they said, because that's two losses. And I said they went 10-3 in their last game against Oklahoma. This doesn't make sense, right? So if you remember, in week 2 of college football, Central Michigan played Oklahoma State. Now, Central Michigan beat Oklahoma State when they were incorrectly awarded an untimed down because Oklahoma State was flagged for intentional grounding on a fourth down as time expired. Like, basically, he was called for intentional grounding, fourth down, time expired. The game's over. You don't just get an untimed down. That's not how it works. Central Michigan then threw up a prayer, a Hail Mary.
He caught it.
And he caught it. Central Michigan won the game. So Central Michigan won this game 30-27. Ultimately, Oklahoma State, as I said, lost to Baylor. They lost to Oklahoma. They finished 10-3. Corey, I have a picture of their ring in front of me. What does that say?
11-2.
Mike Gundy got the rings engraved saying Valero Alamo Bowl 2016 champions 11-2.
He can't change the record book, though. But that's not right. That's the wrong paraphernalia.
He did.
That's not correct, though, because that's wrong. They didn't go 11-2. They went 10-3.
Correct.
Wow.
He's just changing the record.
I love that.
But he's a man. He's 40.
He's
so
a man. I'm a man. Come after me.
He's probably 45.
I'm a man. Yeah. I'm 40. Yeah, he's 48. He's probably 50. Yeah. Dr. A. Ask Dr. A about that. If you can play till 50. That's going to be the first question.
A school spokesperson said on Wednesday that the 11-2 rings were made for members of the team, and that Gundy multiple times counted the Central Michigan game as a win when speaking to his team.
Nice.
The Mid-American Conference officials and the Big 12 replay officials were all suspended after screwing up here.
They should have been.
I thought it was a crazy story.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, hey, he's an interesting cat, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's made some outrageous statements, and at least he's got his players back. I'll give him that. And, you know, he's turned that program around.
He really has.
So I have to give him props where credit is due.
I thought it was he changed the record. You can't even do that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the NCAA when they take away wins and stuff. He just hated them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When they take away...
They took away losses.
Yeah. Yeah, they take away John Calipari's Final Fours.
Yeah.
Every time he make one.
Other cool sports news before we wrap up. We'll go over some starting pitchers and the games that Matt's looking forward to just in 1 second. Serena Williams won the Australian Open while pregnant.
I was going to ask Dr. A about that, too. Is Serena Williams going to be able to compete when she's with child?
She's already won once with child.
Yeah.
But it was like a little, small dot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like U.S. Open. Do you feel what I'm saying?
She's done.
She can't play in the U.S. Open.
No. He's very upset right now.
Who?
The U.S. Open.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine.
She probably still win.
That's funny. So I thought that was really interesting. And then I wanted to quickly get into this, and we said yesterday we would talk about it. So, Corey, let me go to you here. Today is 420, the unofficial marijuana holiday.
Yeah, unofficial.
And the NFL, of course, with the stringent marijuana testing, we've seen Le'Veon Bell, we've seen Martavis Bryant. These are not small-time players get suspended.
No, you're absolutely
for marijuana. Now, we all know athletes, and I never understand it. Because they know these tests are coming. These random tests, they know they're coming. How do they fail?
They want to smoke marijuana. They really... When you say that, I think a lot of these players come from an above-the-law mentality anyway.
Okay.
So they look at it as, oh, okay, I'm going to go ahead and smoke. I know they're coming, but I probably have some kind of masking agent or something like that. Or I get my agent to hook me up with something. And they end up failing the test anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never be able to relate to, a Josh Gordon. I mean, even Le'Veon Bell. The guy is, the best player in the game, and he's not out there. And I think the NFL is putting themselves in a situation where you want to have your best guys out there as much as possible, especially in football where it's so violent, injury can happen at any time. They need to adopt the NBA's law, whatever they do.
Okay.
Because there's plenty of guys smoking weed in the NBA, but...
Sure.
And look, I mean, not just the NBA, and, you know, I think we've all come to the realization, you see it being passed in states where marijuana has been legal, depending upon how you feel, right or wrong, I think we've come to that moment where NFL adopt the NBA rule.
I just think that 75% of all football players smoke marijuana.
That's not scientific.
According to me,
I would go 75%.
Maybe ask Dr. Ray that, 10 a.m. Eastern. 75% smoke, something probably should be changed, you'd think.
But wouldn't you want your best players playing in their prime as opposed to being suspended?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not called enough for long league for...
We spoke to our buddy Marcus Kuhn yesterday. You'll actually hear this interview on Foul Territory tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Network.
Yep.
And we brought up 420, and we brought up smoking. He's like, listen, I had elbow surgery. I was prescribed 50 Percocets. I didn't need 50 Percocets. So a lot of players, and this isn't him, they just start popping these things, these painkillers, and they get addicted. He goes, you know, for me, it would have been easier, and because I was a football player, I didn't do this, it would have been easier just smoke a joint, get rid of some of the pain, rather than pop 50 Percocets. And he goes, he wishes that was legal because that would have just, it would have helped other players. He was fine. He didn't pop the pills. He didn't get suspended or anything like that. But it could lead to a worse addiction than marijuana, Matt.
Oh, without a doubt. We have a crisis in America with this. I mean, this is something that's rampant. I mean, now when you go to the store, you go to buy Sudafed, you got to show ID. You go to buy Robitussin or what do you call it? NyQuil, which I like to take to go to sleep sometimes when I can't. So, I mean, look, we have many more problems than marijuana. And as you said, the pill problem we have in this country is pretty much off the charts.
Matt, we got a Thursday slate of games here in Major League Baseball today. We got a bunch of games this afternoon, which makes it fun. A couple of games at night as well. What are you looking forward to the most?
Well, we have to just make one announcement. It is James Paxton Day. He is
pitching. Oh, ring the bell!
I kind of got into a little Twitter war on Easter, but we never got into that.
Right?
And I was trying to be, you know, pious and all that.
Of course, yes. So we got James Paxton Day. Get pumped for that. Paxton today for Seattle. He is taking on a guy I never heard of in Cesar Valdez with Oakland, so that should be good.
Yeah, we got Syndergaard, we got Sale, we got Strasburg, Lance McCullers.
That's me, it's Lance McCullers.
C-Mart.
Irvin Santana.
Big Irv.
Big Irv. It's a big day. I leave you with this stat, gentlemen. This comes from Jason Stark, ESPN. Stark says, in the span where Mookie Betts struck out zero times, which is 129 games, we said, right? Eight hitters K'd at least 40 times. Byron Buxton, I think, K'd like 100.
Wow.
That's an exaggeration, but you get the point. Hey, coming up next, Old School Fantasy with Dr. A sitting in the entire show. It's going to be awesome. Corey Parson will be here, George Kurtz, and Matt Modica. For Matt and Corey, I'm Greg. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern, only on the Roto Experts. See ya.